This is Cradle My Heart Radio with your host, Kim Cotola. Cradle My Heart Radio, preventing abortion and helping those it hurts.
This is where the healing begins. Oh, this is where the healing starts. When you come to where you're broken within, the light meets the dark. The light meets the dark.
And now, Kim Cotola and Cradle My Heart Radio.
This is Cradle My Heart Radio, and we are so glad that you were able to join us and hopefully join us in our mission of preventing abortion and helping those it hurts. And the only way that this message is really possible is through supporting women in their pregnancies, whether that would be to parent, whether that would be to place a child for adoption, or whether it would be to marry and start a family. There are choices beyond abortion. For me, when I was making that choice, facing an unintended pregnancy when I was 23 years old, all I could see was the difficulty, the fear, shame. There were lots of things that clouded my ability to make a loving choice for my child. And so that's why we're so dedicated to helping women to choose life, for preventing abortion. One of the ways that this is shaping up in the current landscape, which is so different than when I was facing that pregnancy, is through the mechanism of open adoption. And open adoption isn't the only option, by the way. There are foster cares, there's kinship care. There's so many options available to young women who are finding themselves in unintended pregnancies. So we're going to talk about open adoption on this program. And I'm really pleased to be able to introduce you to someone that I met on Twitter during the hashtag campaign My Unintended Joy. And let's welcome to Cradle My Heart Radio, Kelsey Vandervliet. Kelsey, nice to meet you.
Yes, nice to meet you too. Thanks for having me.
And you are not only a mom who has a birth mom who has placed a child in an open adoption situation. We want to hear that story. But you tweet about this openly. You become an advocate for other birth moms as well.
Yes. I'm a part of the Talk About Adoption organization. I joined that back in the fall. And actually yesterday, February 6th, I launched my own blog. It's called From Another Mother, and it's for Indiana birth moms first.
Wow. So we're here at the pioneering first steps. That's awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, you know, I am thinking of headlines always as I'm interviewing people and getting ready to introduce you to our audience. And here's how the headline might read as I became familiar with your story, Kelsey. I had an abortion, then I had a baby, and then I didn't. Is that fair? Is that sort of how the story?
Yeah,
the story went?
It is.
Oh my goodness! So take us back to that choice, because for you it seemed like, like as I said, for me that abortion was the answer. Tell me what was going on.
Well, I was dating someone I had been friends with first, and when I came to him and said I'm pregnant, I never ever expected him to tell me, well, we can't have it, because we were old enough. In fact, I have friends that have, you know, multiple children and are married now. I was 22, I guess, at the time, and I was 23 when I had my birth son. But, you know, he told me, well, you have to get an abortion because I'm going to start seeing someone else, you know, and I don't have any money for you. We don't love each other. So it was really, it was tough to come to terms with that I wasn't wanted and neither was this child. So I went to Planned Parenthood to get the abortion because I knew no way around it. It was terrifying to be pregnant and alone. I knew he wasn't going to be there. It's tough to come to terms with, really, because he didn't want it. He didn't want me. So I thought it could erase the whole history of it. Went into Planned Parenthood, and I went through with the procedure. They woke me up and said it didn't work. So at that point, I went through with the procedure. I didn't have the courage to walk out. I always hear these stories about women who didn't show up to their appointment, or they just couldn't take it and walked out. And I didn't. I went in and I went through with the procedure. The one thing that I did before the procedure was I prayed. And I hadn't prayed in forever. I didn't go to church regularly anymore. I didn't ever talk to God or talk about God. And I sat on the table with my little hospital gown on, and I prayed for protection for my child. That I knew what I was doing. I never had believed in abortion before. I knew exactly what I was doing. And I felt guilt for the first time since I had been pregnant. And they put me out for the procedure. And when I was woken up, they told me, Kelsey, this did not work. And you can come back tomorrow and we can try again. And I tell you, I could not run out of there fast enough. I mean, my prayer had been answered, and that was all, like, that was all of the, you know, verification that I needed. So,
let's take a little break because there's so much more to the story, but wow.
Right.
This first chapter is so powerful. Kelsey VanderVliet is our guest, and she is a birth mother who blogs very recently at FromAnotherMother.com. She's also the representative in Indiana for Talk About Adoption as a birth mom who has placed her child in an open adoption situation. And, you know, Kelsey, the idea that abortion sometimes doesn't work is foreign to some people. There are some people who would say, what are you talking about? That can't happen that way.
Mm-hmm.
How often does this happen where the abortion just was incomplete or failed, or, you know, women are sent away and told to come back or whatever? I mean, it's pretty unusual.
I have never heard of it, to be honest.
Right.
When I got home that day, I remember getting on Google and Googling everything they told me, and I couldn't find anything, and it was so shocking to me. Nobody except the father and my best friend knew that I was pregnant, and so it was tough because I didn't know who else to talk to about it, and I don't think that this is very common. And I truly believe there was some divine intervention there, because I don't have an explanation. I don't have a scientific explanation for it. You know,
it's beautiful. I mean, it's really spine tingling. And when I think about the fact that, as you say, you prayed for protection, and having read your story, I know that you didn't mean save this child from this abortion
right.
in that prayer, and yet God answers our prayers.
Yeah, he had a different plan.
Wow. So, all right, so you ran out of there. Now I'm mm-hmm. having this baby. Okay, so then what happened?
Well, I went to my best friend. Her mother was going to take care of me, so I went to her house. She was waiting for me. She had taken the day off to take care of me, and she's Catholic and didn't support me but wanted to make sure I was okay. When I told her it didn't work, she said, there's all kinds of things that you can do. You know, you can have an adoption, and it'll be wonderful, and it'll be hard, but it will be wonderful in the end. So it took me about an hour to sit there and think about it, because I didn't want to go back to Planned Parenthood. And I didn't want to be a parent yet, and I wasn't ready to be a parent yet. And it took me an hour to sit there and say, well, I can't go back and not become pregnant, so here I am. I have to make this choice for what's best for me and for this child. So I decided to eventually go home, tell my mom and dad what happened, and they were nothing but supportive. And, I made an adoption plan with a private adoption law firm. So, and it turned out to be great.
Kelsey Vandervliet is our guest. And Kelsey, talk just a minute, if you will, about, okay, that conversation with your mom and your dad, because you hadn't brought them into the loop. And it can be really, really hard for us as young women to face our parents when we're not married, we're pregnant. You know, it feels like a moral failure for some of us. It feels like, you know, as you say, like rejection. So there may be shame on top of that. And yet so many people, I've heard the same story from women and young men who, when they brought their parents into the loop, it's not always a happy ending. It's not nirvana. But, wow, it sounds like your parents surprised you maybe or not. So, but just tell me about that conversation.
Sure. My parents, I wrote them a letter because I didn't know how to tell them in person. And I fully expected them to say, well, you're on your own. You know, you got yourself into this situation, and now you have to get yourself out. And I left them a note, and I was living with them at the time. So I went to work, and I didn't even get 10 minutes on the road, and my mom had texted me telling me, you know, I'm not angry at you. I'm heartbroken for you, but we're going to get through this just like we can get through anything else. They were very supportive. My mom, you know, went to doctor's appointments with me. She tirelessly worked to make sure I was covered for insurance, and but she made it as smooth as possible, from being a shoulder to cry on to making me get up and exercise and make sure I'm keeping healthy. So, yeah, she was the best friend I never asked for. So.
So you've got your parents on board, you've got the help, you've got support, and someone has given you the idea about open adoption. So then how did that proceed?
Well, I talked to Kirsch and Kirsch. They're an adoption firm in Indianapolis, and they're wonderful. And they told me about open adoption. Now, my dad is adopted, and his was closed because he was born in 1964. So they weren't doing open adoptions back then. And so that's all I knew about adoption was, you know, you give your baby to somebody or to the nurse, basically, and you never see the baby again until they, you know, you wait until they want to find you someday. And sometimes they don't want to find you. But Kirsch and Kirsch told me there's open adoption. It's basically customized to your wants and the wants of the family that you choose. And so you go through a stack of profiles of families that, you know, are wanting to adopt a baby, and you pick one out, you see which one fits best with you. And so I found a family in Indiana, and it turns out, you know, I can visit a couple times a year. I get pictures almost every week. Well, sometimes like every day, it just depends on what's going on. But,
okay.
You know, you have this new family in this new relationship with these people, and that are raising, you know, they're doing you a big favor and you did them a big favor. And it's a win-win-win situation for everybody. So it's really rewarding.
So tell me about your dad, because that's really unique that you would have a family member who can have a perspective about how adoption, how very different it is when it's open versus closed. And maybe some of his misgivings and fears and how things have gone for him as this thing has unfolded in your lives.
Yeah, well, he met his mother, his birth mother, in the 90s, I want to say, the early 90s, I think before I was born. And he met her, and she was living out in California. And she's still alive, and we still have contact with her and everything. And she's always been my grandma to me. So she's had a difficult life. And she had two kids already when she was pregnant with my dad, and she was actually married. But she was pregnant, and he left, and she didn't have a choice. She didn't have money to raise a third child. She didn't have help. She couldn't even get off work to have some time off when she has an infant, a newborn baby. So it was different times. She never held my dad. She never knew if it was a boy or a girl for at least a month. And it's just, it's given me a perspective of how far adoption has come and how much times have changed. And, you know, and it's accepted more now, but it's still taboo. It's not up to the standard that we would like it.
Yeah, and that's interesting because I know you're associated with Callie Jett through Talk About Adoption.
Mm-hmm.
And
when
we posted her story on our Facebook page, because we had Callie as a guest, I think maybe end of last year. Anyway, I mentioned in the post that Callie is helping to make, you know, to break the taboo of adoption. And there were people who were like, there should never be a taboo about adoption. Well, like, of course not. But I can remember last generation and kids, I don't know if they still do this, you know, taunting with one another with you're adopted, right? And all the baggage that goes along with that, like you're not wanted, you don't belong, whatever, all of the ugliness and, you know, stuff that kids engage in. But that's the baggage that surrounded the taboo. And I think largely because of closed adoption, but also because of the misconceptions that people have. And Kelsey, one of the things that you have said, and this really, really touched my heart. You said, I couldn't give my child a father without giving him a mother too.
Uh-huh.
Right. In other words, if you wanted to place your child in a family, you know, that you as a birth mom and what you're helping other birth moms do is to give your child a better life with a home outside of your own, you know, a selfless, beautiful, for the benefit of the child choice. And I think there are still people who don't understand that. So I'll give you the opportunity just to talk about that a little bit, about what that feels like, what it looks like, what's really at the heart of it when a birth mom makes an adoption plan.
Okay, well, everyone is different. And I think that's the key in learning about birth moms and their choice is some people place for totally different reasons than me. There are women that place that are 14 and, you know, they are in a bad home and they're 14, you know, they're kids themselves and they don't want babies raising babies. And then there are women that do it at the age of 35 because they never wanted to be parents. And I always say, no matter what age you are, if you don't have your life together, you don't have your life together. And if you're not ready, you're not ready. It doesn't matter what age you are. So, I mean, I think we all do it because we know it's best. It doesn't make it easy because we get that bonding time in the hospital too, which makes it even harder to put the baby in another mother's arms. But we all do it because we know, you know, to be a good mom, you have to put the priorities and the needs of your child above your own. So no matter if that priority is to give it to someone else that can do a better job, you know, it's the same. That's what unites mothers in general, is that we are placing the child's needs above our own. I think that's the number one reason why we place for adoption, but there are so many differing reasons and opinions and, I mean, everything you could think of, there are reasons why women do it.
Sure, sure. And thank you for that, because I know that you're not setting yourself forward as the spokesperson, because there isn't, it's the same, it really, I'll tell you, it's the same thing with abortion. And when I started speaking out about my circumstances, my story is pretty typical. You know, I was 23, not married, in a stable relationship, you know, white, using birth control that failed. I was kind of the poster child for 2/3 of the women who choose abortion. It's not generally women of color. It's not generally poor women. It's kind of a, it's kind of a, if you will, a middle class income insurance program, I think, is why abortion persists. You know, like parents and their daughters are afraid for their economic future. So they think abortion is going to be the answer, right? But boy, I've met so many people who had a very different story. Like you say, I met someone who at 15, hid the pregnancy until she was in her third trimester and her mother dropped her at a hospital alone. Take care of it. Right? I mean, that is a really different experience than me walking in at 23.
Right.
You know, similar, it sounds like, to your experience of walking in for that. But I also the woman I met who had an abortion at the top of the age scale was facing retirement, and she and her husband were like, "No, we've raised our family." She had the abortion, and her husband died the following year. And
wow.
And she realized that God was trying to place a companion, this child, in her life for her retirement years. And, you know, I mean, my experience doesn't equate to that. But the common thread, of course, that runs through it is the guilt and the grief that we experience. And I know that you have been very articulate about the grief that attends to being a birth mother as well. You know, grieving, as you've put it, somebody who's still alive. That's a really challenging emotional dynamic. Tell me about how that unfolds and how you're coping with it, because I know a big part of what you do, Kelsey, is to help others, to reach out and you know, reach back to people who are just not quite as far along the path of the journey that you're on as well.
Sure. Well, the grief that birth mothers experience is totally different but totally similar to a death. So when we grieve, we're grieving because we have walked out of the hospital empty-handed. And the bonding between mother and child is very important, as we know, but when we don't have that child anymore, it's like our bonding wants to continue, and it can't. It's cut off. So when we're grieving, we go through the normal grieving process, but it's a little different because we know our child is alive, healthy, and happy, and is going to be doing wonderful things. So when we grieve, it's important to take those normal steps to deal with it. So we have to go through the grieving process. We can't cut corners. But it's really tough for us to figure out those feelings because it's not something that's common. So when we're doing that, on my blog, I started a grief series to help women right when they come out of the hospital, because it's those five grief stages. And there's talk about guilt, and there's talk about denial and anger and all of those things. And it's just a way for them to sort those feelings out and say, am I normal? Am I going to be okay? How do I go on? Where do we go from here? And these are the questions that birth mothers really need answered as individuals.
Sure. So tell me about it's a boy, right? You have a son that you placed for adoption. Tell me about him.
Mm-hmm. He is growing so fast, for one. He's like in the 95th percentile. So he's a big boy. He's born on May 17th. So he is going to be 9 months old this month. He is always smiling. My mom actually the other day just said to me, that's how I know that there was divine intervention in Planned Parenthood that day, because that boy has never frowned or cried. He never even cried. So, I mean, I truly believe God has something special planned for him. He's a wonderful light to that family, and they love him, and they are so happy and thankful for him. And I feel totally blessed that I was able to carry him.
Kelsey VanderVliet, our guest. Well, we've got just about a minute remaining. Your pet peeve, or the number one thing you wish people knew, here's your chance to set some kind of a record straight, Kelsey, about open adoption, what people, maybe stereotypes, whatever you feel needs to be said.
Okay. So there's a adoption triad, and it's the birth mom, the adoptive mom, and the child. And I think sometimes the birth mother is ignored. Fortunately for me, I went through an excellent adoption, and I'm having a really rewarding experience. And but all of our journeys are going to be different. The similarity of experiences isn't really the goal. The goal is to make every experience positive and rewarding. We really need recognition, and we really need support. So after we leave the hospital, we go home and we sit down and we say, now what? So I want that now what to be, you know, a counselor to make sure they're mentally healthy, a scholarship to attend school so someone to help them find a job or a career path. And these women need goals to work toward and a path to follow. I want them to not fall back into that same life, making the same detrimental and life-altering choices from the past. It's important to be on that path of responsibility. So I just want them to be recognized and supported. That's basically, it's my pet peeve that they don't, like, they don't get that support and recognition. They kind of fall by the wayside.
Yeah, so the rest of us have a chance to make the second chance really positive experience for you. Kelsey, thank you so much for sharing your story with us and for your choice, because it was a brave one and a courageous one, and you're really a role model. I appreciate you, doing what you do.
Thank you.
There are links to Kelly's organization as well as the work that she does through Talk About Adoption at cradlemyheart.org. And I hope that you will visit it soon. Now stay with us coming up here on Faith Radio. Phones are open and we'd love to hear from you. 1-800-811-3003.
A safe place to connect with others. Finding God's love after abortion. This is Cradle My Heart Radio.
This is where the healing begins. Oh, this is where the healing starts. When you come to where you're broken within, the light meets the dark. The light meets the dark.
Cradle My Heart. With Kim Cattola. Join the conversation. Call toll free 800-811-3003. 800-811-3003.
Well, good evening, and thank you so much for being part of our live portion of the broadcast. The phones are open at 1-800-811-3003. 1-800-811-3003. And I would love to hear your reaction to Connie's story. Connie's a woman who didn't start out in life as a pro-life advocate out front, although, as you heard from her story, she was all in at a very young age until life intervened. She's not a person who was an activist, is what I want to say. And she came into the pro-life movement and into the pregnancy help work movement because of her business expertise. And so it's been very interesting to see the reaction to people, you know, hearing that Connie was going to share her story. And I just really applaud her for opening up her heart. And if you want to do that too, give us a call at 1-800-811-3003. You know, the reason we share our stories, of course, is to give God the glory. And I can remember many people cautioning me that I should not be public with such a private story. Back in the day, before I answered God's call to share the truth about abortion, and I was every bit of as afraid of that as I was of being pregnant. You know, these fears are so huge, and it's a fear of an imagined public that holds some sort of power over us. As Connie mentioned, reputation, and that was a big thing for me too. But today is National Radio Day, and I thought I would share my story, and I haven't done that in this way. I've given you bits and pieces, obviously, as I just said. You know, I'm a person who has been public with having had an abortion, but I thought I would share my story because it's completely bound up in my radio career. And it's very dear. I didn't realize that it was National Radio Day till I took a quick look at Twitter this afternoon. And I said, National Radio Day? Oh, this would be fun. I found a picture in the archives of an interview with Kathy Ireland. And we were cracking up about something. I don't remember even what the joke was, but I remember she's just a lovely person and a wonderful woman of God. It was a great interview. I asked her about, you know, the pressure to be beautiful all the time, and she had a great answer. She said to me something, you know, some words about how, look, your neighbor may have a boat parked outside their mansion, but is it paid for, and are they losing sleep over the bills at night? You know, appearance isn't everything. In fact, it isn't anything. Really, what matters is who we are. And so I'm just so, I don't know, it was just a wonderful thing to have the opportunity to interview her. So I just put that picture up on Twitter and said that, you know, it was one of my favorites from my broadcast days. And, you know, she is my favorite pro-life celebrity, because if you've ever heard her story, I think she was interviewed on Mike Huckabee's show when he had a TV show. And she talked about, you know, reading her husband's medical text. He's a doctor, and, you know, reading embryology. And she said, you know, it's a life. And she became pro-life based on the science. And, you know, I mean, as a high-profile celebrity, if you think it's difficult for a woman to share the truth about having had an abortion, try being in the public eye and being 100% pro-life. It's a very brave thing, you know, for her to speak out about it. So I put my little tweet up, and I went ahead and tagged her in the tweet, and she answered me, which was, I mean, that was just so dear. Thanks, Kim. And this is what I love about what Kathy Ireland said. In her response, she said, as an advocate for life at every stage, we must never judge a woman who's had an abortion. When it occurs, there are two victims. That is an amazing insight, and it's such a loving response. And that just really blessed me. And I told her it blesses every woman who reads that, because we all still fear who might say what. You know, if you think that simply because I'm public, it doesn't feel vulnerable to say, you know, what the truth is about the story, well, you're mistaken. It's always a vulnerable thing when we share something this deeply personal. But if we allow fear to silence us, how will we warn others? We are the witnesses to the truth of it. Now, not every woman who experiences it is willing to tell the truth. Some remain deceived in their hearts. Some remained too broken to speak. So I don't judge those women who don't speak out. But if we allow fear to silence us, who will warn others about the truth of what it really is? So I'll say to you about my story. And I wrote the whole story in the book, Cradle My Heart, Finding God's Love After Abortion. And I've mentioned this before, but someone got in touch with me just recently for a free copy, and we always will make that available. It's a nonprofit effort here. So if you need a copy, you send me an email, kim@cradlemyheart.org, and we'll send you one. Didn't write the book to make money, okay? I'm not here plugging the book for profit. I'm just telling you, we wrote it as a resource so that people could access the scriptures. It's stories from the Bible of people who appropriated the ministry personality of Jesus Christ, you know, for their healing, and how we can still do that today. That's what the book is about. But my story unfolds in light of these scriptures as well. And what happened was, I was in a committed relationship, and we were engaged, but not married. I was 23 years old. And I had put myself through broadcasting school. Well, I went to college for a couple of years at Northwestern University as a theater major. And I decided pretty early on that I didn't really want to pursue a career in theater. So there I was, not really knowing what I was doing at Northwestern University. I was very aimless. And so I quit and walked away after 2 years. It was a very foolish decision. But it was the decision that I made. And I was looking for love in all the wrong places. But my dad was very kind and never spoke a word of rebuke to me. Instead, tried to help me find some direction and suggested that I go to radio school. There was a vocational program in Minneapolis at the time. It's still there. I think it's Brown College now. It was Brown Institute when I was there, and they gave you a broadcasting certificate. You needed one. This was so long ago, and the FAA required you to have a certificate that you could do something with a transmitter, which they prepared me to pass the test, I'll tell you. And so I went through that program and got a job, and my first job at WJON in St. Cloud, Minnesota, working 11 p.m. to 4 a.m., and I had an air name. My handle was Ann Jackson. I called my show the Ann Jackson Affair. as an overnight DJ. Anyway, after a year, I was hired to work in the Twin Cities, and that was my dream. That was my hometown at the time, and I, you know, I was 23 years old, had my own show, and life was great. Well, I had become engaged in, you know, I was commuting back and forth to the Twin Cities in that year to see my fiance. And so this was great. We were going to be able to be together, and I had this, I had the job now. And about 3 months into the job, I'm pregnant. And when I shared that news with him, he said that we weren't getting married and he wouldn't support a pregnancy. And there were two or three people that I consulted with, and they said, you know, well, you're 23 years old and you've got this career and you're going to have to take care of yourself. You should have an abortion. It was 1978. It was a long time ago. I realized recently I would have a 40-year-old. That's how long ago this has been. But, you know, human nature being what it is, the story is still the same when I talk to young women today. I mean, things are a little bit different. You could do a little research on Google or, you know, your phone, which we didn't have back then. Sometimes young women don't. They take the word of the people that they entrust with their health care at Planned Parenthood or places like that. And that's what I did. I asked, is it a baby? And they said, no, it's just tissue. And I asked, is it painful? And they said, no, it's like having a tooth extracted. And so I allowed that decision to be made for me, and I passively went through with it. And it was a simple procedure medically, but emotionally and spiritually, it was quite traumatic. And I believe it's always traumatic. Even if women have general anesthesia, I believe it's always traumatic because we've been present when another human being has died. And we have to process that as a loss. But the culture says it's not a human being, so there's no loss to process. And so it's extremely difficult to even acknowledge that there is grief going on. And I stayed locked in that place of being unable to access my own grief and cycling into despair and denial and despair and denial for a lot of years. You know, during that time, I became a follower of Jesus Christ, which only made things worse in the short term. That period of attrition until full repentance sets in, where you're just so aware of your sin, but you don't have the gift of repentance to access the remedy, the redemption of life in Jesus Christ. But that did happen for me eventually. And that alone is what allows me to share the story and to tell you that by the grace of God, I am who I am and I'm not who I was. It's time for a short break. We'll take your phone calls. If you want to share your story, this is a great place to do it. You don't have to give your name. You can call in anonymously. That's okay. And we'll keep all your information private. 1-800-811-3003. 1-800-811-3003. And again, if you have a word of encouragement for Connie, our guest earlier tonight, and share your hope and how her story impacted you, join us to share that as well here at Cradle My Heart Radio.
A safe place to connect with others. Finding God's love after abortion. Cradle My Heart Radio with Kim Cattola. Call toll free at 800-811-3003. Seeking to help others find God's love after abortion. Cradle My Heart Radio with Kim Cattola. Call toll free at 800-811-3003.
Thank you so much for being with us tonight. 1-800-811-3003 is our number. 1-800-811-3003. You know, when I first began sharing my story, there were people who cautioned me that it wasn't wise, that it wasn't necessary, that it wasn't polite, that it was a downer, that it was not going to be popular. I remember before I wrote my book, someone said to me, well, is this what you want to be known for? And they said, is this what you want to talk about for the next couple of years as you promote the book? And these were all good questions, right? I mean, the only reason that I share my story is, well, there are two reasons, as I said, to warn others, to tell the truth, to warn others that from conception forward, there's a distinct living and whole human being present in every pregnancy. A life that has value because it's made in the image of God from the moment of conception forward. A life equally valuable to mine. A life entrusted to me. That's what was destroyed in that abortion. And I don't bear 100% accountability. There were many, many people who were accountable for not preventing that abortion and some for actively promoting it. They've all been forgiven by me because God's grace and mercy has covered all of it. And I have the assurance that I have a child in heaven that I will see by the grace and mercy of Jesus Christ. And so for those reasons, I'm free to speak and share the truth. But the reason that I do it is to let you know what God can do for a broken, desperate sinner. He can restore and redeem and renew, and he can return what's been wasted. You know, as I was in the period of healing and in the moment of knowing that I was fully forgiven, but not knowing all that God would have in store for me, I came to that verse in Ecclesiastes 3 that says, God has made everything beautiful in his time. And I thought, how will you make this beautiful? But here we are, all these years later, as I've collected hundreds of stories of God's hand in the lives of women and men just like me, who made a terrible mistake or who were faced with a terrible choice and did the right thing, the loving thing, the life-affirming choice. And in every story, God's love shines. I want to share with you this song from Graham Kendrick and Townsend and Getty. And if you've heard it, just enjoy it. But listen to it in light of how often abortion is presented as something that will preserve our worth. This is, my worth is not in what I own.
My worth is not in what I own, not in the strength of flesh and bone, but in the costly wounds of love at the cross. My worth is not in skill or name, in win or in pride or shame, but in the blood of Christ that flowed at the cross. I rejoice in my Redeemer, greatest treasure, wellspring of my soul. I will trust in him no other. My soul is satisfied in him alone.
As summer flies, we fade and die. Fame, youth, and beauty will be mine. The life eternal calls to us. The cross.
tears here that I confess, my worth and my unworthiness, my value fixed, my ransom paid at the cross. Rejoice in my Redeemer, greatest treasure, wellspring of my soul. I trust in Him now, my soul is satisfied in Him alone. I rejoice in my Redeemer, greatest treasure.
Is because, you know, the lyric in that final verse says, two wonders here that I confess, my worth and my unworthiness. My value fixed, my ransom paid at the cross. This is what we need to understand after abortion or in the midst of the chaos of an unintended pregnancy. And so often, those voices outside our heads, or maybe even close inside our lives, that tell us we need to take a certain course of action or we need to not speak truth, those voices begin to determine our worth, begin to make us feel as though if we don't listen to that, if we don't satisfy that particular vision of our future, that we have no future whatsoever. And it's such a beautiful, beautiful song. It's one of my favorites. And Graham Kendrick he's been at it. He's written over 400 worship songs. And in speaking about this one in particular, he said that, you know, this idea about my worth and my unworthiness, it came from some words written by John Stott, who said, "Our self is a complex entity of good and evil, glory and shame, of creation and fall. We're created, fallen, and redeemed, then recreated in God's image. Standing before the cross, we see simultaneously our worth and our unworthiness, since we perceive both the greatness of His love in dying and the greatness of our sin in causing Him to die." How better to help people understand our worth and our unworthiness, and the infinite love of God, than by sharing the truth, as Connie did with us tonight. It's just such a beautiful thing. I encourage you, you know, if there's an abortion in your past and you've not yet found your way to being able to speak publicly about it, that you wouldn't just, you know, turn off the radio and go sit down and write it out or call somebody. I encourage you not to do that. And one of the things that we have to do is we have to be really wise. And unless God calls you to speak publicly, I think that there may not really be that many good reasons. You know, I mean, this has to be a spiritual undertaking, because there will certainly be a spiritual battle that will follow. Know that we will pray with you and for you in that, and we're certainly always open to talking with you and counseling with you. I'm not a professional counselor, but I'm a peer counselor and a student of God's Word, what I can share with you. You can email me, kim@cradlemyheart.org. That inbox is only seen by me, and it will be kept in confidence and kept private completely. Or you can call us at 800-811-3003. And if you get a voicemail, know that we'll return your call within 24 hours. Please just reach out to someone who cares, whether it's your local pregnancy help center, to get connected with abortion recovery resources, your pastor, a friend who's been encouraging you. Share your heart and share what God has done for you and in you and through you. And if you have no word to share on that score yet, keep hoping, keep praying, and keep your heart open to His love. Kim Cattola saying thank you so much for being with us tonight. Remember, Jesus loves you, and so do we.